Good morning and welcome to our web-based radio show. This is Dr. Greenspan. And today's subject will be finally to get to the branches and leaves of our learning tree. As you remember, we covered the tree trunk and the root system. And today we're going to actually talk about specific academic skills. And today's show will be a little bit briefer because we've had some technical problems, but we'll get started and then we'll continue this. Actually, we won't meet next week, but we'll continue this discussion in 2 weeks. What we're going to begin with, probably the first thing that most children begin with, reading and reading comprehension. Now, the key is to remember that if we've done our homework and got a good tree trunk and we've strengthened all the roots, including our language and auditory processing roots and our visual spatial roots, the child is well positioned now to learn to read. And the actual effort involved in mastering reading will sail smoothly if we've done our homework with the roots and the tree trunk. And it's always important to remember whenever you're having a hurdle and a child is having a hard time learning to read or do math or to communicate orally or writtenly in writing, go back to your root system and go back to your tree trunk and say, is there any more fundamental work I have to do? But in the approach to helping children with the actual branches and leaves of the tree, in this case reading, you'll see we're going to be further strengthening our root system and even our tree trunk as we do this. So everything reinforces everything else. Now, the key principles that to underline in working on reading and reading comprehension and the other academic and learning skills are, one, to always use all the senses and the motor system involved in learning. So you're using the whole mental team involved in the child's learning. Also, we want to use the highest level of thinking possible. So we want this to be thinking-driven as opposed to rote memory-driven. So we want it to be thinking and multi-sensory and motor-based. And third, and probably most important, we want it to have high affect and a lot of pleasure in particular, but to be emotionally meaningful to the child. So we want to create the learning initially on the things the child is very interested in, so we have his full emotional investment with pleasure. And fourth, related closely to number three, is not only do we want to make it meaningful to the child, but we want to create an early sense of mastery. And we want to set it up so the child is being successful 70 to 80% of the time. So if we use a curriculum where the child is only successful 30%, they're going to feel discouraged. And children, being children, tend to work harder when they're mastering and receiving positive feedback. And this is just a question of pacing the learning. So every child can be paced in such a way that there's a 70, 80% success rate, but not if they're have to be the same as Sally or Johnny or someone else next to them. So we want to have a sense of mastery. So let's look at reading. Now, the first part of reading is being able to figure out what those shapes mean you're seeing in front of you. You see the word B-O-Y, what does that mean? Or you see the word B-E, what does that mean? Now, the first step in figuring out what these shapes mean is something that Pat Lindemood and others who pioneered in reading have called phonemic awareness, the ability to discriminate the sounds, because you have to be able to match the sound to the shape. So if it's a B sound, a B, you see the shape of the B. You have to recognize that visual pattern. And you have to then be able to connect it to the B sound, for the E sound. So one of the first things we want to do is say, can the child understand these different sounds? Can they, in technical terms, discriminate these different sounds? In other words, can they tell the difference between a ba and an e, or a ba and a duh, or a ba and a ma? And the closer the sounds, obviously, the harder it is to tell the differences. Now, in terms of phonemic awareness, and some of the approaches that Pat Lindenwood pioneered, but others as well, there are many ways to do this. The way I think the best, that builds on the work of Pat and other pioneers, is to see if the child can actually say this sound after they hear you make the sound. So you might go ba-ba and see if the child can actually imitate the sound. And if the child's having difficulty with it, let the child see how your mouth is moving, and even put his fingers in your mouth, and then look at his own mouth in a mirror and see how his mouth is moving. And then you can play games. If the child can't make the b versus the d sound, you can have a b, which is a lip where you're touching your lips, and a d, where your tongue comes to the upper part of your palate. And play a little game just with your buzz and does, and then add your muds on. And so the first step is to make sure the child can make all the different sounds that the child is going to need. But we don't have to go through the whole alphabet. We can begin working on some sounds. And here's what I advocate. That we take a few select sounds that are going to be part of words that the child uses every day that are very meaningful for the child. Like, let's say the child likes to play. So we'll work on puh and la and a and y, play, okay? Because that's a word the child's going to be very invested in. And we want the child to see how this works, so it's not all very abstract to the child. So we might take those four sounds to begin with. And rather than follow the alphabet or follow some pre-described sound sequence, say what words are fairly simple and easy to learn, and which ones am I child that I'm teaching or parenting most likely to be invested in, that are part of his everyday life. Maybe mom, M-O-M, or dad, or a toy, T-O-Y. And we'll work on repeating those sounds. And if a child can make the sound easily and discriminate or know the difference between in toy, T-O, versus Y, that's terrific. Child's having trouble with it, again, we'll use the mirror. We'll play a little games where we go over it more times until we think the child kind of has it. If the child's still having difficulty with it, we add on some more elements to it. And one of the things we do is we can this time the child put his hands in our mouth and see how our mouth work and see how the child's mouth works, how his own mouth works in the mirror, we can do what another colleague does, which is let him hear different people make the sound and see how close he can get to making different sounds for those different visual images. Also, to make this more meaningful to the child, we want him to be able to either see the visual image, so when we go, buh, we want to see a big B, and then with your hands, actually make the B in the air. And if the child is able to, he can do it right on a page, or he can first copy your hand movement in the air, and then the two of you can do it together on a page where he can copy what you're doing. Or if he's gifted enough, he can do it himself. We also, it's fun to have the child then walk it off on the floor. So we can have a big B, for example, for boy, on a big piece of paper on the floor. And the child can step it off. And then he can step it off like it's a dance, you know, making a B without the actual seeing it on the floor. So now the child is doing it with his gross motor movements, doing it with his fine motor, i.e. in the air and on paper, making the sound, and connecting the sound to these motor-based and visual images, but she's seeing the bee also as she's doing it. So it's a buh, buh, buh for the bee, and the same thing for the E, and the same thing for the Y. I mean, B-O, the O, and for the Y. So until we have boy. And the same thing for play or toy. Once we master three or four letters, we have a word. And what we should do is also, in seeing a word like boy or toy, he'll see that certain sounds go together. B-E is B. So it's not just B and E, it's B, which is a blend. And I favor getting into the blends quickly, not mastering each one separately, but showing how these kind of go together. You say you kind of say quickly, B, A, E, B, okay, or eventually T, O, Y, you know, toy. And then you can actually write out the word toy and have a big picture of a toy under it. The child can see the toy, his favorite toy, hopefully. And now he's already reading. So he's got three letters, and he's a reader. That will give a sense of mastery and excitement and pleasure. And then you move on until you've covered all the letters of the alphabet, all the vowels and consonants, and all the different kind of blends that are pretty frequent. So start off with the picking words also that have, you know, certain consonants and vowels together. Again, not going with what's in the dictionary in terms of the blends that are most commonly used or even those that are in curricula, but rather blends that fit in with words that he's going to use every day at home and that are meaningful to him and that he's going to want to read about. And now, hold on just 1 second, and I'll be right back with you. So just remember that our principles are we want to use all the senses in an emotionally meaningful way for the child, have a sense of mastery, and use things that the child is already very familiar with, like a toy or play or go out. And so the child gets a sense that they're moving ahead and reading very quickly. And in teaching the basics of letter or visual image sound connection, make sure the child can hear the sound, make the sound, i.e. imitate it, connect it to the visual image, and do something motor-wise, writing it in the air, writing it on paper, and maybe walking it off. And all three together kind of gives the child the fullest sensory and motor mastery. Now, some children will do this relatively easily and not need all these steps. They may be recognizing words without you knowing you ever taught it to them. They kind of pick it up on their own. And then you can really bypass, in many respects, this first step, unless you find that the child has difficulty with new words and is doing it all by visual memory, in which case you want to go through these steps and make sure the child can also sound out words so they're also doing it with new words. But if they have a good ear and they've picked it up on their own or with minimal effort, you can whiz through this first step of simply being able to do step one of reading, which is simply recognizing and saying what the word is that you're reading or saying it to yourself. Now, step two, which is reading comprehension, or the second part of reading, is the more challenging part because that involves our basic thinking skills, and you can't really comprehend what you read beyond the level that you can think. And here, we want to use lots of understanding, and we want to promote understanding. And in again, here too, my colleagues, Pat Lindemuth and Nancy Bell, especially Nancy Bell, came up with her visualizing verbalizing program, which is an excellent foundation for learning to use thinking as a vehicle for reading comprehension. And building on Nancy's work and other people's work and our own model of the stages of thinking that are part of the tree trunk, we've come up with an approach that we think you'll find very, very helpful. It involves a number of steps. Once the child is, you know, able to read sentences and little paragraphs, help the child in the following way. And there'll be a number of steps to this, and they're going to parallel our levels of thinking that we talked about in the tree trunk. So these will be the pretty much very, very similar. The first step is to focus on what the image is that's in the passage and help the child literally describe what's in the passage using all their senses, not just vision, but also movement and touch and smell. In other words, make it a multi-sensory idea, that sentence. So if the boy is walking in the flower bed and looking at the flowers, describe what's happening in that, in there. What is the boy doing? Even though it doesn't say what he smells, what is he like? What do you think he's smelling? What color are the flowers? What shapes are they? Get as much detail as possible about what's happening. In other words, describe it in as much detail as you can imagine. Or if it's a sentence that talks about the boy has a new bicycle and is very excited. Okay, well, what is that bicycle? What is, you know, describe what's happening and what does it look like? And what, well, even though it doesn't say what color would you make it a color? And it's new, but it would have a smell to it. How would it smell like? What do you think the boy would like to do with that bicycle? Okay? So you're really describing what the experience of the objects or the characters in the passage, just the scene, the tree was blowing in the wind. Okay, what does that look like? What's happening there? What does that tree look like? What color is it? You know, do you think it has leaves or not leaves? Just ask any questions that help the child give more detail to the passage. And I'll be back with you in just one more second. Okay. So the first step is describing basically what our first stage is in our functional thinking capacities in our tree trunk, which is an awareness of the world. So the world is the passage, and just as a child looks at mommy's face and sees big eyes and a nice shiny mouth and a big smile and hears nice sounds, here too we want to see what is the child seeing in the passage, what are the passage convey in terms of smell, and also is there dialogue in the passage, what's being said? Is the boy talking to his daddy and saying, Daddy, I want a new bicycle. What is the boy saying to his daddy? What does he want? So the adult reads the passage as the child does and then asks the child to describe it and then helps with questions about all the things the child can see, the things the child that doesn't state, but you can guess from the fact that there are flowers or a bicycle, what's being said. If there are smells or movement, you know, what's happening. In other words, describe it as richly and fully as possible. Then the second step focuses, as you remember, on relationships, on forming relationships. So what are the relationships in the passage? Who's relating to who? Is it two people? The boy is asking his daddy for a bicycle, or the boy is giving his mommy a hug. So what's going on in terms of the relationship? Or is it to objects? The boy is opening a shiny new present. And how does the... And then we get to the third step. What kind of purposeful actions and emotional interactions are occurring in the passage? How does the boy feel about his new bicycle? What is he doing with it? What is he doing with the flowers? What is he doing with his daddy? What's happening? What's the purpose? What's the intent? Is there any exchange of basic feelings? Then the fourth step involves problem solving, shared problem solving. Is the boy solving any problems, doing anything? Is he opening up a package to get his new present? Is he looking and exploring how his new bike works? Okay, there may not be. It may just be a tree blowing in the wind. Okay, and there may not be any problems to be solved. Then the fifth step is what is happening in terms of creative imagination and ideas. And here we want to see if the child can embellish the passage with some creativity. Well, if you were going to extend this, what would happen next? If you were writing this passage about a bicycle, would you put anything else in it? In other words, can a child create some imagination or some use some creativity to add to what he's already described? But what he would do, can he build on it? Then the fourth next step is connecting ideas together, being logical, making sense. This is where the child explains, like, I want to go outside because it'll make me happy. So here we get to a new level of describing the feelings in the passage. Is anything causing the child to feel a certain way, or the daddy to feel a certain way, or if a tree had feelings, how would the tree feel when the wind? Well, it's cold and snow. That tree is probably feeling cold, so he's probably not feeling very good. So here we approach feelings again from the point of view of one thing causing another. Or are there other things causing things in the passage? Is the boy happy because he's got a bicycle? Are there any causal relationships implied in the passage? In other words, where one thing is affecting another or causing another. And then we get to multi-causal thinking. Is it more complicated? Are there multiple things, like the wind and the rain is making the tree wither at the vine, you know, so that there are lots of things happening to that poor little tree. And then we get to gray area thinking, shades of gray. The passage may be complicated with two characters having a discussion or two friends who disagree with each other. And we want to look at gray area thinking and comparative thinking. Well, how does the boy's feelings compare to the daddy's feelings? What is he thinking and the daddy is thinking? And how angry are they at each other, or how happy are they with each other? So we get to gray area thinking. And then finally we get to reflective thinking. Remember, this is where you can think off an internal standard, where you can say, I'm happier than I should be, or I'm angrier than I should be. And here we get the child's opinion. But this we can't do with a very young child just beginning to read. This would be with a 9 or 10 or 11 or 12-year-old. What do you think about that passage? Or what do you think about the author? Would you do it differently? How does he compare with other people you've read? In other words, what's your opinion about it? So here we want the child to be reflective and actually be somewhat critical and analytical, comparing it with other passages, other authors, with the experience in the passage compared to their own experience. We want the child to project themselves into the story. Well, if you were a tree blowing in the wind on a cold day, you know, how would you feel? Does the author capture that, you know, describe how you would feel? Would you describe it differently, etc.? So we can think of many examples, and we can each add in many more examples of each of these. But basically, we walk through our different levels of the tree trunk, strengthening them as we're comprehending the passage and using them to bring the passage alive, to make it part of our personal experience, to make it as multi-sensory and emotionally rich, and then look at the relationships, any sort of purposeful actions, problem solving. We create beyond the passage, We look for causal connections, causal events happening in the passage, and then we look at the higher level thinking that we can apply to that passage. So that's our lessons for reading comprehension. If we do that with a child around their reading, every child will be a good comprehender and will be a better thinker. So we're strengthening comprehension and thinking at the same time. Now that's all we're going to have time for today. And next time, it would be in 2 weeks, we'll go into math and math reasoning and the best ways to strengthen those while we're strengthening the fundamentals of the tree trunk and the root system. Okay, thank you very much.